It's the Leading on Purpose podcast, helping leaders, teams, and organizations lead more intentionally, effectively, and with purpose. Welcome back for part two of my conversation with Doug Waltman regarding the coaching leadership style. Enjoy. How about as a practitioner, kind of a, you know, facilitator, consultant, leadership coach, as you stepped into that space, what's been your first encounters and even your journey with the coaching leadership style as you've tried to, you know, influence organizations and their use of it?
You know, John, as you asked that question, there were two things that came to my mind. The first one, so when I stepped away from my corporate career and started my own consulting practice, there's, you know, even with all that experience, a bit of trepidation of, you know, am I going to be able to make this work? Am I going to be able to add value to these clients? And so when I was starting, once word was out that I was out doing my own thing and I would be asked to come into an organization and chat with a leader or two about what's going on in their organization, what I quickly realized is that the coaching leadership style was the appropriate basis for the way I was engaging these potential clients. Meaning, I didn't come in thinking, well, I need to win them over with my knowledge and expertise and hear a little bit of their problem and think I know it well enough to say, well, I've faced that four times in my career and here's what I did and with what results. It was very much using the coaching leadership style to just simply show up and be curious and ask questions. And John, I can't tell you how many times at the end of the conversation, this is probably one of the things I was most pleased with in my efforts in my consulting practice, is when someone, especially someone I just met for the first time, would say at the end of the meeting, it's like, you know, thank you for coming and listening. And it's amazing how often you get called in as a consultant and the client that's called you in already has a preconceived notion of what their issue is and what it's going to take to fix it. Yeah. And I would always come in with the mindset of, I just want to hear your perspective on what's going on. What are your pain points? What are you concerned about? How do you view this issue? What does success look like for you? And what's so interesting is sometimes the very thing they called me in to do for them didn't even end up being the thing that needed to be done. Now, from a business development standpoint, that's not maybe the most brilliant model, because there are times I would leave and it's like, yeah, it's training's not going to take care of this, or my consulting, it's more of a policy issue, or maybe dealing with a performance issue you haven't dealt with. But people will say, just our time together gave me additional new insight about what my issue is. You've given me some good things to think about today. So I notice from a practitioner standpoint, the coaching leadership style translates so well into just helping anyone kind of move on down the path and deal with a struggle they might be on. And then from a coaching standpoint, because I've coached a lot of leaders over the years, it's a similar journey to what I described and you described about just an awakening to how they're leading. And many times when I would coach leaders, they would complete the assessments. Sometimes I go into an organization, I just have conversations, informational interviews with folks just to find out about how this leader's interacting with folks. And so it's an opportunity then when I provide the feedback, whether it be assessments or the qualitative information from interviews, doing it in a way that increases the likelihood the person's going to be receptive to it. Yeah. And you don't sit there in judgment.
Right.
So when you're coaching someone, it's, you know, I was told in my coaching training, it's you're holding up the mirror to someone and not in judgment of the person, but just to help them gain clarity around what's going on. And John, in most cases, had a fair degree of success of just helping people come to terms with where they are in terms of how they're leading and the impact they're having. And then what would be really exciting then is for them to close the loop with their team, thanking them for their feedback, for the insights, and then in partnership, working with their team on their development and becoming a more effective coach. and all the success stories, and I know you've had numerous success stories too, coaching and working with people, when that light bulb comes on through the coaching process for them, and then to see them really pay it forward to their team in terms of the results that they're able to get is just, it's some of the most rewarding work I've ever done in my career.
Yeah. Yeah. My experience has been very similar, and it's fascinating and so enjoyable how fantastically transitional coaching is to consulting. So it's not just a style of leadership that leaders within organizations can use, but it's such an impactful way as a consultant to engage an organization,
yep,
to really listen, let them do the bulk of the driving, facilitate discovery for them, hold up that mirror for them as an organization. And I've just thoroughly enjoyed how coaching has translated, and I actually get to use it a ton as a consultant with organizations. It's been interesting the last several years working with organizations on their use of it within the company. And I think the number one red flag that organizations tend to throw up that's an obstacle to coaching is the time that it takes. And years ago, I was I forget who the facilitator was, but I was in a presentation where the individual really talked about the trade-offs we make over the given course of a day as a leader. And this was 15 years ago. I think it's truer today than it was when I first heard it. But he talked about the difference between efficiency and effectiveness. That's so often that when you're choosing between the leadership styles even, so if I'm, for example, choose a more directive behavior where I'm going to tell people what to do and kind of send them on their way versus I'm going to sit down and this is going to be a coaching conversation that could take 30, 45, an hour to get through, that we'll make choices throughout our day because of how fast the world moves and how much demand there is for results today. We'll make decisions as a leader that are in the name of efficiency without realizing I may have just lost some effectiveness. And so what got me what I needed today, I may have traded something down in the long term. And that's the big piece of resistance I encounter. And I just thoroughly enjoy helping organizations examine that, be a little more mindful. And I'm not saying the choice is always coaching and the choice can always be effectiveness over efficiency. I realize it's, you know, it's got to go both ways, but it's the awareness piece. If I can get them to come to terms with, are you aware and mindful of the choice you're making when you trade those things off? And I'm not saying you can always choose one or the other, but if you're mindful of the impact it's going to have, I think that's an important piece with it. You know, whenever I facilitate this Hay Group, Korn Ferry Hay Group theory in large group settings, inevitably, I will get someone who pulls me aside during a break and really describes their resistance to the theory. And so one of the things I'll tell people, because basically what they'll say is, I don't have time for coaching. And by the way, I'm getting good results. So I don't think I need to shift my behaviors. I think directive, pace setting, some of these other styles are serving me fine. I don't want to shift. This sounds hard. And so one of the ways I feel that is what I find is usually one of three things is usually the case when someone's saying, I'm getting results in spite of your, you know, your fancy little theory there, John, around coaching. And so I'll ask them, I'll say, well, number one, can you tell me how hard are you personally working to deliver the results that you're currently getting? And this is very sore thumb, by the way, but I would say 75 to 80% of the time, they'll say, you're right. I'm personally muscling these results and I'm dog tired and it's not sustainable. It's all on me. Sometimes though, they'll say, no, I mean, I'm working hard, but I'm not killing myself per se. I'll say, okay. Could you imagine for me, what would the results be if you were tapping into the full potential and performance of everyone on the team? And I'd say maybe 15 to 20%, almost all the way to 100% at this point would tell me, you're right. I think we have another gear that we haven't tapped into. I think there's dependency on me. I think this team has a more potential that I haven't tapped into. Still, I'll have a few people, even after those two questions, say, no, I don't think it's either of those two things. And so my response is typically, keep leading that way. I'd love to talk to you in about 6 months. Because I think from a theoretical perspective and from my own observation, and I think you would agree, the use of these leadership styles tends to be a lead indicator of where results will go. And so if you're out there right now and you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I want to try this coaching thing. I want to start exhibiting these types of behaviors, have these types of conversations with my team. You're going to have to manage your own expectations in terms of the immediacy of results. It takes time for these things to translate into the results that you seek.
Well, it's an interesting point about the time. And I think it's really important to be realistic about it. In fact, I'll make it even worse. Sometimes it does get worse when you use
before it gets better. Yeah.
Before it gets better.
Yeah.
And I've had that experience firsthand myself when I really leaned into the coaching leadership style, whether it be a group of people I've been with for some time. I'm thinking of a situation where I took over a team where the prior leader had a very controlling leadership style. And all of a sudden I come in and I'm using the coaching leadership style where I want to hear their perspective. I want them to own it. I want them to be bold in what they're saying and doing. And I had some people that just immediately blossomed. I mean, it was unbelievable. One person I'm thinking about, you know, it's like when you take over a new team, I don't know if it's a good idea to read their HR file or not and what prior leaders had said about them. In some ways, I think just the blank slate can be very productive because it could be the former leader's beliefs about that person that was really holding them down. And one person just, I'd been told, I don't think this person's going to make it. And after a couple of months, I'm like, what are they talking about? This person's like a rock star. It was just like they were able to shine through in a way they'd never been able to. I've also had individuals that just are like, no, I kind of like the old days when my leader would tell me what to do and control things. And this isn't exactly what I signed. And sometimes they need to exit the team. And so, some people, the transition is terrific. You see immediate results. Other people can struggle with it for a while. One thing I'd add to that, if you know, people are listening to this going, yeah, is it really worth it to try it and the time commitment? Predictably, one of the things that happens when somebody starts using the coaching leadership style with their team, the team gets trained in it, meaning they have an issue or a concern, and let's say they've been working with you as a leader, really using the coaching leadership style. And before they come to you, here's what I would find. My team members would know, okay, if I come in there with this issue, first thing Doug's going to ask me is, what's your perspective on this? What's going on for you? What's holding you back? What obstacles are you facing? What ideas do you have about how to address those obstacles? And John, it would almost become a joke with people when I would lead, because they would come in and go, Doug, I need a coaching moment with you. And I've already done the first 30 minutes of the conversation.
Self-coaching. Yeah.
But that's growth and development, by the way. Yeah. The coaching leadership style, people get used to it and they start coaching themselves in a way. And so sometimes people would come in, hey, I've been through the process. Here's my perspective. Here are my ideas. Before I kind of launch on this, I just wanted, what do you think? Yeah. So it's just almost a confirmation that they're on the right path. So, you know, it is hard work. You mentioned it, to really embrace the style and learn the nuance of it. And it can take time initially with people, but this is a long-term game here that we're playing with folks, and absolutely a great investment of time and the strength of your organization just gets lifted without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. One other thing, and we touched this a little bit earlier, is not pulling the rug out from underneath your team as you look to maybe shift some behaviors and try to do more coaching as a leader. You know, something actually you taught me years and years ago in one of our initial interactions that's really important for leaders to think about, particularly if they're going through a development experience. So they're examining themselves, they're using self-awareness as a way to bring light to how am I showing up and how versus how I want to show up, is being very upfront and honest with the team, what are you shifting and why? And we talked about the importance that, you know, both sides of this coin should reframe things as they think about coaching, both the leader and the person on the receiving end. And if you can really describe to someone, here's what I'm going to be doing a little bit differently in terms of my behavior. So when you show up in my office and there's that knock on the door, that interaction, my intention is going to look a little different than it has. And here's why. And even going maybe as far as to enroll them in, do you agree that having that type of conversation would maybe be more beneficial to your development and our relationship overall? So really soliciting their perspective, getting them involved in the solution that you're trying to implement. One, I think as a leader helps you hold the line on the behaviors you're trying to implement because you can get some, you know, immediate feedback on how it's going and be held accountable potentially by them on, am I doing it? Am I doing what I said I would do? But I think it's another kind of crafty way as a leader to close that gap between intention and perception. You can avoid more miscues if the team knows exactly what you're intending to do because you've told them, here's what I'm going to be trying to do a little differently in terms of my leadership behaviors. Well, now I don't have to guess as much anymore when I'm on the receiving end. And so I think being very upfront and honest with your team, what are your behaviors going to look like and why? It can be a really key ingredient to being successful with these coaching behaviors. And to your point, holding the line on them over the long term, particularly if you're not seeing the results right out of the gate, being upfront and honest is a way to make sure you'll continue doing it until you do start to yield some of the benefits, because it is such an investment in the long term.
You know, John, for the coaching leadership style to work, there needs to be relationship and trust. And so even in using it, if you notice someone's performance is still struggling or they come up with a game plan and it doesn't work out as well as what they'd hoped or you had hoped as the leader, that's an important moment in the relationship and the process. So first of all, it could be very tempting for a leader to jump in and take over.
Yeah.
Say, well,
it's not working.
You know, the ideas you picked and the way to do it, that's not what I would have picked. So now that you've tried it and you've kind of, you know, stubbed your toe on it, let me give you the answers. Well, as soon as that happens, we're teaching that person that my ideas are better than yours. I don't really believe in you. And the next time, maybe I just need to give you the answers instead of allowing you to really own and develop this yourself.
Yep.
The other thing too, folks, when they're really starting to use the coaching leadership style, is to get real clear on how you're going to handle those bumps in the road. So again, John, if you're on my team and through the coaching conversation, there was an action that you determined and it didn't work out as you had hoped, instead of me sitting down with you and almost scolding you or calling you out for it not working, the coaching leadership style is, John, what have you learned? What's going on for you? As a result of what you experienced with this, what ideas do you have now? And so you fight that temptation at times, especially if time is of the essence, to just jump in and take over, because they're gonna learn on their own. It's kind of like kids. Your kids are much younger than my daughters, who are now young women, married. And about the time I was learning about the coaching leadership style, the girls would have been right about, 12, 13 years old, that wonderful, magical time in the life of raising kids. And I got to tell you, if you're still not sold on this coaching leadership style as it relates to work, try it at home with your kids. In those early years, you got to be directive to keep them safe.
Yeah.
But those adolescent years, that's all about them finding out who they are as a person. And my experience is, as a parent, when I'm trying to control and dictate, it doesn't work. And it's really hard when you see one of your kids make a decision. In the back of your mind, you're going, uh-oh, I'll bet this is not going to turn out well. And you want to jump in and rescue them and save them from themselves. But sometimes that's exactly what you need to do with your kids. And I think the same thing is true in the workplace, is sometimes you just need to let people experience their experience. Yeah. And as we mentioned early on in this podcast, it's one of the most powerful ways to grow and develop is through that experience. And then you as a coach can facilitate that reflection process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. And maybe the other thing I heard you just say is giving yourself a little bit of grace and the person you're coaching that it's not a finite, super theoretical process. It's a little messy.
Yep.
And so, you know, giving yourself the grace to get it wrong as the coach, certainly giving the person grace who's trying out some of their own new ideas, you know, making sure you're not instilling any fear of failure in this process. And it's pardon our dust as we kind of coach through this. That should be expected as part of the coaching process.
Absolutely.
So one of the things we've alluded to, and maybe as a last perspective to explore in today's episode with regards to the coaching leadership style, is the importance of self-awareness and self-management. And so in one of my early episodes, I spent a little bit of time talking about the importance of self-awareness. For me, it's where leadership development really starts. And I think what was interesting for both of us, the stories we shared earlier in terms of our first encounters with this coaching leadership style included this looking in the mirror, this moment of really coming to terms with who am I and what am I doing and how am I showing up. But let's maybe as a last perspective here, explore that a bit further. How do self-awareness and self-management in your experience really provide an important underpinning to the use of the coaching leadership style?
That's a powerful question. And embarrassingly enough for me, when I think back on my development as a leader, I did not appreciate the importance of self-awareness and self-management till much later in my career. I, you know, if I had any do-overs, it would be magically somehow earlier in my career to just understand that. Not, you know, frankly, not only just as a leader, but as a human being walking around on the face of the earth, whether it's relationship with my wife, my kids, my friends, my parents, whomever it might be. And so step one to me is awareness of self, who you are. And my assumption is individuals listening to this podcast are not lacking for having gone through different personality assessments, whether it be Myers-Briggs or DISC or whatever it is. And those can give you some really powerful insights about how your natural hardwiring and who you are. So for example, for me, and John, you've known me long enough and have worked with me long enough, I like things to be right. I can be kind of a tidy person wanting predictability. And sometimes that serves me really well. And I got to tell you, in coaching, it doesn't. You have to be in that moment with that person, not really knowing what's going to come up in the conversation. And so for years and years and years, my leadership style, how I interacted with my team members and led my team was just my natural style. And so the natural gifts that I've been told I have and assessments would indicate, I'm pretty good at painting pictures for people. I'm pretty good about having conversations around a vision that gets people excited. And then kind of the dark side of my style is in operationalizing that, I can tend to take over.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, team, if you thought this vision was great, here are the 10 things we're going to do in priority order. You're going to do this and this and this and this. We get this done, we're going to knock it out of the park. And so for years, that's how I led, with okay results.
Yeah.
And once I started to gain more self-awareness about who I am and how I naturally lead, John, it's not suggesting that we totally walk away from who we are. How do we leverage the gifts that we have? But self-awareness is about understanding when does, in my case, the need to control really get in the way? And how do I have my team members hold me accountable to that? And I've been so bold once I gained a better understanding of this with team members to say, you need to let me know if I have lost my awareness of how controlling I am or how much I'm directing your activities, you got to tell me. And that's one of the things I would routinely check in with my team members is, how am I doing around that? Do you feel like you're empowered and you control this. And then the self-awareness and self-management isn't just about yourself, but it's the person you're coaching as well.
Yeah.
Do you have enough social awareness of the other person to just experience and see how are they doing? How is this message being received? How is this conversation going? Where are their energy levels?
Yeah.
You know, one of the mistakes I would make as a leader is forcing ideas on people. Even when I would use the coaching leadership style and you're having a great conversation and they come up with their two ideas, then John is like, well, here's another idea for you to consider. Well, that's a watch out for a moment because there's power in that relationship.
Yeah.
And sometimes without knowing it, the person would say, oh, boss, that's a great idea. I really like your idea. It's like, oh, okay, this is great. And off they go. And John, what I learned over time is I have to be really aware of what their needs are, their excitement levels. And what's really hard, at least for me, to manage it myself, is if they've come up with two ideas, and they're pretty good ideas, but I got the one that's a killer. I mean, this will just rock your world. Sometimes I just keep that to myself. Yeah. Now, you talk about self-management is to leave a conversation without sharing your wonderful idea, but I would much rather have them leave the conversation pumped up, fired up, committed to their ideas versus them feeling like I have forced my idea on them. So it's not only self-awareness and self-management of self, but the coaching leadership style just requires you really connecting with that person and understanding where are they in their journey, their reaction, their energy levels, their development, and meet them wherever they are.
Yeah. Yeah. The self-management pieces that really stick out for me that you mentioned, one is, I think as you're listening to this, it could be easy to think, well, if you're resisting natural things about yourself and about your behavior and your personality, does that mean now you need to be unnatural? And that's not what we're saying at all. It's remaining authentic to who you are. And it may be a matter of finding a different kind of version of yourself that's very authentic in terms of who you are that resonates a little differently for that interaction or with that individual. But a lot of this, when it comes to self-management, as you mentioned, is about resisting some of those natural things that you would otherwise do. And that doesn't mean you're going to an inauthentic place. You're just resisting something that could be damaging to the conversation, damaging to the development experience, and just not appropriate in this particular conversation or context. And that resisting can be really tough because I know one of the things that can run through my mind, and I see this run through other leaders' minds, your example of they've got two ideas that are kind of meh in terms of their merit, but they're excited about them. They're excited about those two ideas. You know why? They thought of them. That's where part of the inspiration and motivation and the use of the coaching leadership style really emanates is they get excited because they're in the driver's seat on this thing. Well, then your example showed, well, I have this idea and because I'm the leader and I'm awesome, I'm the coach, I've got a 10. I mean, this thing is 10 out of 10. It'll, you know, knock your socks off. One of the things you need to resist is, do I owe them that answer? Am I not doing my job as the boss or the leader if I deny you my level 10 solution or answer? And I think what we're highlighting here is that you're not denying them. You're actually providing them something that's way more important, which is inspiration and motivation to their own idea. And the space and support you're providing to, yeah, let's give your thing a try. I'm going to resist the temptation. And sometimes the role I think I ought to play for you by giving you the answer, I can almost feel like I'm denying you something. And you just got to reframe that in your mind as you're listening to this and you're thinking about how do I implement this style. It's resisting temptation and reframing your role in these conversations as the leader.
Well, John, I'll throw in the term humble pie here too, because I've experienced this as well. So we'll build on the example. They had their two ideas and I've got my 10. And then they go off and do their ideas. And guess what? They're pretty damn good.
They work.
And in fact, One of the things that I believe to be true about coaching someone around an issue that they're facing, they're the expert. They're the closest to the issue. And I think the thing that was really tough for me as my leadership career advanced and I was serving in more senior level roles in the organization, your perspective changes. You're not as close to these issues as you used to be. And so sometimes the person that you're coaching, they are the expert. They're the closest to it. They're living with it every single day. And so, you know, when I faced this issue 10 years ago in my career, that's why I'm thinking this is a 10. Well, the world has changed.
Yeah.
Things are different. Their issue isn't necessarily the same as the one I had 10 years ago. And it's a fun part of the coaching leadership style, but it can be humbling because the ideas that they had many times are better than the ideas I had. And if you shut that down and force your ideas on them, not only will that person never have the excitement of bringing their own ideas to life and having success, well, the organization loses out because now we're moving forward with my ancient ideas that worked 10 years ago versus the creativity and innovation and commitment they have to their situation today from their fresh perspective. So I can't tell you how many times, whether it's with people I lead or I'll go back to my girls' ideas they had growing up, it's like, oh, that ain't gonna work. And then actually they'll come back later and go, look what happened here, Dad, isn't this great? I'm like, dang, I had no idea it was gonna turn out this well.
Yeah.
So it's, you have to be open to that and put your ego in check and understand you're not the expert. They're the expert. You're here to facilitate their discovery of what's going to work best for them.
Yep. Yep. So maybe as a final thought or question, and this is a tough one, where do you draw the line as a leader in terms of when you should step in? Because a couple things that we've talked about here that I'm not a fan of, one, and this is kind of different, but there's a version of coaching out there that I think we've alluded to that's really manipulation, where I'm going to ask you a set of questions that gets you towards the conclusion that I've already decided you should go. Newsflash, folks, that's not coaching. That's more of a directive or even a pace setting style to point someone in a particular direction and have no underlying curiosity as a leader in terms of where this should go. So certainly something you want to separate from this definition we're providing today of what coaching is and maybe what coaching is not. But the other thing I've not been a fan of in my career, both in personal experiences and as I've worked with organizations, is allowing someone to face unnecessary harm in the name of development. I think a certain amount of bumping your head and trying things and getting feedback and reflecting on experiences is important, but I think sometimes there is a line to draw where I don't want the member of my team to experience unnecessary harm. And so I know it's a tough question, Doug, but where do you draw the line on that? On when should I step in and say that idea, you know, I'm a little leery about, and here's why. Thoughts around that?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you not come up with a tougher question?
Let me check my notes here.
So there are two things that just jumped out at me when you were putting that question on the table. The first is there are times when people have ideas or something they want to move forward with that. I mean, here's the easy things. That's against company policy, or, you know, that's unethical.
Yeah.
Or we don't have the resources and tools to whatever it is. And so if you're going to be in the way of somebody executing an idea like that, is give them the context and the reason why. But here's a more nuanced approach to this that I've used. If I have those concerns, and they're, let's say that, John, you're playing out this idea for me or something you're going to go and do and as part of your development, and I've got those concerns, instead of flat out telling you, I don't think that's going to work and let me tell you why. And maybe this goes down a little bit of the path you talked before about manipulative questions, but that's not the intent. is if you think about what are going to be the challenges that somebody's going to face in doing something, is to kind of do the theoretical conversation around, John, if we were to do X, help me better understand how you would handle this outcome or this challenge. And you can ask questions in a way that gets them to begin to think more deeply or even differently about their choices. And ideally, what can happen, one outcome is they come to their own conclusion, like, oh, yeah, if I did that, that is creating something over here that could be detrimental to myself, the team, the organization, whatever it is. But here's the other magical thing that can happen. A concern that I have, and where I might be tempted to jump in and shut it down, say, no, we can't do that. I'm going to save you from yourself. Sometimes I will ask that question. They've got a great response. Well, if that happens, I actually have thought about it. And I think I would do this, this, and this. And John, there have been times I'm like, okay, I hadn't thought about that. So actually that risk or that idea you want to do, my concern is lessened.
Yeah.
Because you've thought about it and you had a great response about what to do. So it can give me more comfort that I'm not sending you down a path that's really going to be harmful to yourself. And however we define harmful.
Yeah.
So first, yep, there are times you just step in
and
give them context so that it doesn't seem arbitrary. I've seen leaders say, well, that's just not a good idea. What a crap response to tell somebody. They need the context. But number two, in the spirit of the coaching conversation, is to ask curious questions. And I can think over the years, times I've been absolutely blown away by the responses people have given me saying, you got this. And by the way, one of my natural personality styles is I tend to be risk averse because I do like things buttoned up. So sometimes for me, leading a person that's a little bit more risky and out there, when I hear those responses, it's like, okay, I'm more comfortable with this. But I've been given that feedback from people in the past too, that I'm sometimes too limiting of what people do because I'm risk averse.
Yeah.
And I need to be more comfortable with risk. So again, that goes back to the self-awareness piece of this. So anyway, love the question. I want to ponder that a little bit more, but that's just kind of my initial thought about how you can handle those situations.
Yeah.
How about you? Is there something outside of that you find is helpful when you try to decide when to step in or not?
No, I completely agree with you. Is the act of deciding that a particular idea isn't going to work because is it almost moves you outside of coaching now. You're now using one of the other leadership styles. So it's interesting to me to have you mention that the same kind of curiosity and vulnerability you would bring to the rest of the conversation would also apply for any concerns that you might be bringing to this conversation as the leader. And so I love this idea of, hey, I've got a perspective to share, which, by the way, is absolutely on the table for discussion when you're coaching someone. They're doing the heavy lifting, but your perspective is an important part of this conversation. And so bringing something forth for them to help you examine it, I think, is the way to handle it. And doing so with just a ton of curiosity. And I would say this is one of those moments for a lot of vulnerability. The vulnerability for me would be being open to the possibility that you could cause me to look at this concern differently.
Yep.
But if I don't bring it up for discussion and I just decide it's an obstacle or it's an absolute, I'm no longer coaching you. I've moved to something
that's
else.
Great point.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I think that does it for today's episode. We covered a ton of ground and I just so appreciate you having you join me as a co-host for this very important topic about coaching. I know we've got more to cover on the coaching topic. And so at least a few more episodes, because there's more to unpack and explore. But again, I just wanted to say thank you so much for co-hosting today's episode and look forward to talking more with you on these topics.
Same here, John. Thanks for the invitation. Always good to be with you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for tuning in for today's episode. Don't forget to like and subscribe here at the bottom, and we'll talk to you in a future episode. Thanks so much.